All right, welcome. Glad you are with us on this Saturday as we continue the Lindell TV Thanks-a-thon. And yes, I'm wearing a special jacket today. I don't usually wear this on air, but every now and then. Does anyone want to guess where this jacket came from or what this jacket is? I bet you. Here's what we'll do. We'll put it up at frankspeech.com. By the way, we've got Todd Benzman coming on the border wall. We've got Susan Swift. Hey, there's Mike Lindell. See what Mike wants, will you, real quick? We've got Dr. James Thorpe. We've got all kinds of people coming on. We've got a big, big, big lineup that is coming on today. Mike's going to be jumping in here at some point as well. All right, but if you want to guess where the jacket's from, I'll tell you what, we won't say right now. We'll let you guess. If you guys can guess where it's from, we're going to go to frankspeech.com. Under the player, there's a comment section. You can guess who my jacket is originated from and who is a tribute to today. So you guys can guess. We'll let you know. All right. In the meantime, like I said, we have Todd Benzman coming up on the border. Title 42 being lifted. Leo Holman wrote a book called, what was it called, Leo? Stealth Invasion. What do you make of this Title 42 being lifted and what's happening right now? Could you have ever imagined this when you wrote that book? And what year did you write that book?
2017. Well, it was the research and writing was mostly done in 2016, and it was published first of the year 2017. And the book predicted a lot of what is going on right now, breaking down mostly legal immigration, the way that our government passes laws and regulations to allow people to come in legally through different channels. There's a whole host of channels that people never have even heard of. For instance, would you have guessed, Brandon, that we have a legal immigration program that recruits religious people, clerics, and goes out of its way to make sure that we bring in a certain number of imams every year?
Oh, wow.
It's called the religious visa program. Yes.
Annie's shaking her head.
The
yes,
R1 visa and R2.
What do you know about this, Annie?
Well, this actually all started with when in 85, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, this former supreme leader of Iran, started investing in Islamic scholar schools in America and England. And then from there, they pushed for, based on freedom of religion, Muslims have the right to practice their religion in Western countries. But because under Islam, you have to have a specific level of credentials to be an imam or a mufti or a supreme leader or whatever, we need to be able to send our own graduates to those countries in order to continue training the next generation of Muslims. And that's how we got that visa passed,
right,
to have Muslim imams, clerics, teachers. Like Imam of Peace, known online as Imam of Peace, is one of those immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
got approval visa to go, I think Australia is where he went to from that very program.
And wow. Annie, this is something that people I interviewed for my book told me. If I had known you back then, I would have interviewed you. But Muslims and former Muslims told me that because of this clause, because of this program, this R1 religious visa program, where we actually go out and provide incentives for clerics of all faiths, including the imams in the Islamic faith, to come here and immigrate, because they know this, most of the imams, like 90% of them in the United States, are foreign-born,
mm-hmm.
and they tend to be, I was told, the most radical. More radical than even the average your average imam in the Middle East. These are the ones emigrating to America under the R1 religious visa program, and it just makes sense, right? If you're a smart, intelligent Islamic leader, you would want to exploit this loophole in our immigration system and use it to bring people over here that are going to be the most skilled in shaping people's minds, hearts, and minds, both Muslim and non-Muslim, here in the United States to accept Islam. Am I right?
You are very right. The only thing I would say, or I would rephrase, is they are the most devout, mm-hmm. not radical. They are the most devout, meaning they follow every single verse of mm-hmm. Quran. And they are also very interesting, very, very well-versed in our culture.
Right.
So they use our own culture to maximize the convert number. Like, for example, if we go back to the gay club shooting in Florida, this happened when an Iranian Shia imam got a visa, came in for an educational seminar, and on the last night of his quote-unquote seminar, he said, go out there and kill them out of mercy for them. And next day, literally next night, the gay club shooting took place. And the person who did it, what was his name? I can't remember. Something Martin. But that person attended that very mosque and listened to that very Iranian imam. And next day, you have the gay club shooting happening.
Right. And so that is sort of the violent aspect of Islam imported here into the United States legally through these immigration programs. But there's also a softer side, which is in a way just as sinister. And I would like Annie to explain how this works. The concept of Dawah. Could you explain to the audience what that means, Annie, and how it really undermines our culture?
You're talking about Dua, right? Mm-hmm. So Dua is kind of the mandatory part for Muslims where they have to preach Islam and they have to try to, technically by definition of word, it means inviting, mm-hmm. invitation to Islam.
Non-Muslims
mm-hmm. to Islam. And it's interesting that there's a little tiny loophole there, or not a loophole, but tiny article there that they are to approach Christians more than anyone else. Explanation. In the book, in the Quran, Jews are known as cursed people. I'm just a messenger. Don't shoot me. But they are cursed as apes and monkeys. Mm-hmm. And they are so filthy that they should not be given a second chance to come back to their roots being Islam. So an atheist are to be punished by death. So you're left with Christians, and the population majority are Christians, so target Christians most. So they come and do the Dua once a year. They have these big events going on. They have like booths and tables and tents. And what they do is they come to Christians as, we worship the same God. We believe in Jesus. Yeah. All you need to do is just say the Shahada and you're good to go. That's the maximum information they
give. And you become
a
Muslim then when you say the Shahada.
Correct, but they don't give all the information. They kind of give you half-truth. And then after they do say the Shahada, and it's funny because technically...
And can you explain to our listeners what the Shahada is?
Of course, it's Shahada means testimony. You testify that Allah is the only God, Muhammad is his messenger, mm-hmm. and that's it. You're a Muslim.
Very simple phrase. Yeah.
Now, if you're doing a Shia convert, there's a third line when you say Ali is the trusted man of Islamic society. That's the third line you add to as a Shia. Otherwise, it's that testimony. But what they don't tell you is, before you say the Shahada, by the way, if you do say the Shahada, you're going to have to denounce Christ as your Lord and Savior. And if you don't, then we kill you. Those two parts are left out.
Those 19 Coptic Christians, if people might recall, who were slaughtered on the beach in Libya, that's a classic example where they were offered the choice to say the Shahada and live, which would be a denial of Christ, or to reject the Shahada and have your throat slit from ear to ear and bleed out into the water. And that, I think, sticks out in a lot of people's minds.
Very true. Here's the problem, I guess, being biased aside. Everybody needs to realize that with Islam, there is no winning. There is no way out. You don't say the Shahada, you shall be killed, because literally explanation is convert or kill. That's the end of it. Mm-hmm. There is no ifs, buts, none of that. Convert or kill. Now, let me insert jizya in there real quick, because some people are like, oh, if you're a Christian, you get to stay Christian, but you pay the jizya. Well, you stay a Christian, but you become a second-class citizen. You never have the right to work for the government. You never have the right to own property. You don't have the right to own your own business. And you have to pay protection money. And the protection money, jizya, or protection tax money, is so high based on the jobs you could possibly have, you're going to run out of money at some point, and we're back to a square one.
That is
convert or
a
die.
Special tax or tribute that a Christian would pay if they live in a Islamic majority type of society.
If they live in an Islamic ruled country, so if the land is ruled by Sharia, the law of the land is Sharia, then you can stay a Christian, but you're going to have to pay that extra. On top of everything else, you pay the extra. Now, a lot of Muslims will explain jizya as tax money, but technically jizya is protection money because you're dealing with mafia. They will take that money and they will leave you alone. They won't arrest you. They won't raid your underground church because you can't stay a Christian, but you only are allowed to have small churches underground, meaning it's a house. There is no cross outside. There is no promoting it. None of that. It has to be completely underground.
Even church bells or any singing of praise and worship songs cannot be heard.
Not at all.
Coming out of that church.
Very true. It cannot even be called church. They are allowed to call it gathering of Christians, but they're not even allowed to call it church or temple, any of those words. No. However, ironically, on the hypocrisy part of Islam, in America, now in New York, in Los Angeles, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, a lot of places, you pass by and some of the Muslim-owned stores are loudly playing the Islamic call to prayer, and you're just going to have to endure it.
And blocking the streets and city streets in London and formerly Christian cities like that, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. They've been importing that culture. But as I said, I don't know. Well, it's simple. Just read the Quran, and it tells you that you don't say the Shahada, you die. You say the Shahada, you better become a good Muslim, or you still die. So that's why I say it's a death cult. Everything is about how you're gonna end up dying unless you submit. Remember, the word Islam itself means submission. It does not come from salam. A lot of Muslims will tell you Islam comes from salam, which means peace be upon you. No, Islam by itself means submission. It might sound close to each other, but it's not. So unless you submit fully to Allah, which Allah in the Quran refers to you as a human, refers to you as his slaves, therefore you have to submit to the slave being Allah's slave. Otherwise, one way or another, you're dead. They will kill you.
Wow. So, you guys are amazing. By the way, I've been sitting over here booking guests like crazy. So, by the way, one person got the jacket so far, yes. She said Graceland, question mark. Yeah, well, I didn't get it at Graceland, but that's close enough. That's close enough. It did come from Elvis Presley's personal tailor, who has a store in the Mid-South. Here's a screenshot. This is where Elvis wore it in Speedway, 1968. That's not quite the blue I've got. But that's all his tailor had. But
I
this
is—I
have
nicer.
Actually have the red one. Maybe in the afternoon I'll change and go to the red one, Leo, because I have the blue and the red.
Nice, so, I like it.
And by the way, here's another trivia question: who owns the rights to Elvis's "Amazing Grace"?
I have no idea.
Mike Lindell.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's good information.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Have you been to Graceland?
I have not.
Are you serious, Annie?
I have not.
Oh, I might have to take you on a personal tour.
Please.
some folks in the audience are like, "Are you kidding me?" Because some folks, but if you're not into Graceland and Elvis, then you don't get it. But if you are, you get it, right? So I went the first time I ever went to Graceland. Then we'll get back to serious topics because I've been sitting over here poking on my phone, booking tons of great guests. But the first time I went to Graceland, I went with a lady that was named Betty, who is from the Mid-South here, and grew up with my mother since she was four. My mother and her became friends at four. And being that they were raised outside of Memphis, you know, they all knew about Elvis long before the rest of the world did. Anywho, she and her friend, Betty, her friend, wanted to get up there to meet Elvis. So they would bring some kind of, like, preserves, homemade preserves made by one of their relatives to the guy at the gate, which was like some distant cousin or something. I had the law of the family working for him. And they would bring him these preserves all the time and just trying to convince him to let us get in a golf cart and go up the hill and meet him. So they did this all the time after school, apparently. And so one afternoon, he says, "All right, girls, he's going to have a little get-together by the pool this evening. You guys come back by about this time. I'll put you in a golf cart, take you up the hill, and I'll introduce you to him. So they went home, they got ready, and sure enough, they showed up at the appointed time. He put them in a golf cart. He drove them up the top of the hill. They're in, like, junior high age. And took the girls out by the back of the pool where he was entertaining his guests, introduced him, and she said he was so polite. And then he said, would you like to have a tour of the house? So they went and got a full tour of the house. And then he brought them back out to the pool and thanked them, said it was nice to meet them, and the relative put them back on the golf cart, took them back down the hill, and they left. So she takes me to Graceland, my first trip to Graceland. She takes me. And and if you've never been, you don't know, but they take you in small groups with a tour guide. And they're telling you what's going on and everything. Well, the people in our group starts hearing her tell the story again and talking about, well, when we were in the house with Elvis, I asked him for a drink of water, and he went over to that sink right there. This was in the TV room. There's yellow counters in the TV room with all these banks of televisions, which was a big deal then, right? Not now. And he went over, he said, oh, yeah, yeah. And he went over and he got a glass, and he filled the water, and he put it on the counter right here. This door's right here. Everyone in the room, in our little group, is hearing her, and they're like, wait a minute. You were in the house, and Elvis gave you a tour of the house? Nobody paid attention to the tour guide the rest of the trip. They only wanted to hear from Betty. They only wanted to hear Betty's version of what Elvis had to say about his house and description of the house. So anyway, that was my first trip to Graceland. I've been a few times. My wife's not been. Logan, have you been?
Yeah.
What'd you think of it? He was pretty young when he went and says cool. It's cool, but it's also a little depressing, to be honest with you, because I felt sorry for Elvis. Mm-hmm. You know, he just seemed to... He was a seeker. He was a seeker. He was always reading books. Always reading books about every religion under the sun. The guy was really seeking.
Wow.
But and he had a lot of clingers on, you know, I think. But it's kind of a sad ending. But anyway, that's, of course, not far from where you're sitting right now. So one of these days, Leo, Annie, we got to take you to Graceland.
I would love to go. And here's my little story about Elvis.
Did you guys know who Elvis was in Iran?
Yes, I did. The only, a Western singer that I knew about,
uh-huh.
or at least I knew the name and how he looks like, was Elvis. But I didn't actually see an actual picture of Elvis until I was in Turkey. But the reason I knew was... My oldest uncle, from my mother's side, my mom's oldest brother, was known at his, you know, young age, was known as the Iran's Elvis. Because he looked like Elvis, and he was very good at doing Elvis
stuff,
moving
really.
And stuff. So I was familiar with the name until I actually got to hear one of his songs. I'm like, oh, so that's Elvis. So I'm very interested.
Okay, so we're
going
to have to take you to
Graceland. I bet you every country has its own Elvis.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. So anyway, all right. So today I wore the Elvis jacket. Maybe I'll put the red one on later. Not that anyone really cares, but...
It'll match your tie.
That's right.
And it would match my...
So we've got 10 minutes. We've got Todd Binsman coming up. And then at 2 o'clock, we have Dr. John Witcher, Dr. John Witcher. At 3 o'clock, we have Ivan Ranklin coming on. He's going to talk about the push that people are calling for, which is for Donald Trump to be the Speaker of the House. Because that can happen, you know. They can vote and put anyone they want. Folks are still pushing for that. I don't know how likely that is, but that's entertaining. 3:30, Susan Swift is going to come on. She's an attorney with the pro-life group in California. Susan's going to come on and talk about the 12 Republicans. This was your idea, Leo. Why? What are we going to talk about and why?
12 Republicans crossed over and voted with Democrats to advance to the floor a bill in the U.S. Senate that would... It's called the Respect for Marriage Act. And it's basically going to codify the Obergefell decision from 2015 in the Supreme Court, which legalized gay marriage. That way, if it was codified, Brandon, what happens? The court can never reverse it.
Right.
And so this bill is advancing with the help of 12 Republicans. And the Federalists came out with an article this morning saying that they had put out a questionnaire to those 12 Republicans. Only two of them, I believe, two or three of them responded, and they're doubling down. They're saying they're not going to change their vote if it does come for a full vote, which it will. And they're going to vote for this. Now, the problem with the bill is people on the right, even some pro-family groups, are trying to say that it includes a clause that allows Christians to, like nonprofits to opt out if they should be confronted with a decision to, say, bake a cake for a gay couple getting married. This is false. It does include something in there giving an opt-out to nonprofit religious organizations, but not to private businesses.
I'm sorry, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So, two things. One, just to make sure I understand this, so they just want to make sure that never, ever in America we can reverse that decision.
Exactly.
Okay. And then second, but just a note here, this is exactly why we say, I say, personal opinion, this is the opinion of Annie Cyrus only. It may not be backed by anyone else on Lindell TV. But this is why I say stop voting per party and start voting for those who are followers of Christ. This is why. Because you just said 12 Republicans are
right.
behind
and,
this,
and most
right?
of it was the usual suspects, you know, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Burr out of North Carolina, Richard Burr, I think is his mm-hmm. name. Also the other North Carolina senator. Both of them are on the list of the 12. So, yeah, it is a problem. And basically what this legislation will do if it passes, it will set Christians up for being sued by the mm-hmm. U.S. government.
But
we will have
the
Justice Department of the U.S. government going after Christians for denying service to gay couples who, you know, they pray. You know, you don't see these gay couples walking into Islamic cake bakers
exactly.
or Islamic photographers and saying, you know.
Is there going to be a special claw there to protect Muslims from being sued? Are they going to get freedom of religion practice there? Are they going to get protection? Because
no.
I promise you, every mosque and Islamic centers will have exclusion or what do we call exempt from this law.
Exemptions, right.
But not the Christian business.
I don't think there's anything specifically written in there exempting Muslim institutions. However, it's an unwritten rule in the U.S. Department of Justice, as well as just in the, you know, the gay activist, gay mafia, whatever you want to call it, the LGBTQ mafia. They do not go into Islamic photographers' offices or Islamic cake bakers and say, bake me a cake. They only do this for Christians.
Well, probably because nobody wants to get blown up.
the opinions expressed by the guest, Annie Slyers, are not...
I did say that right before I started saying. I said,
I
this is
did.
A personal opinion.
I'm just messing
but,
with you.
But here's the other question about it is, am I correct that we already do have the law that the business owner, private business owner, holds the right to serve or not serve an individual?
Depends on what we're talking about. Not under certain civil rights laws that can be construed. No, you could be sued.
Right.
So if, like the cake...
I mean, you'll see places saying we reserve the right to deny service to people. You'll see that kind of sign. You know, no shirt, no shoes, no service kind of thing. But they have to be...
But if you have no gays...
Yeah,
on the
but
side.
That's the thing. I mean, but that's the yeah. thing. If, let's say, if a person refused to bake a cake for a gay couple wedding, they get to be sued. But if banks go after Mike Lindell and shut his bank accounts down,
oh yeah, there's a double standard in the law. There's no doubt about 100%. That.
100%.
You can discriminate against Christians all day long. That's politically acceptable. Absolutely, Annie. That's why we're no longer living under the rule of law. I mean, they're making the decisions up. They literally make them up. This is what is called legal positivism. This is moral relativism applied to the law. The fancy word is legal positivism, started in the late 1800s thanks to Christopher Columbus Langdow, who taught the idea of case law theory, not original intent, but case law theory. There's a whole chapter on this in my book, Grave Influence, that you can get in my bookstore at cost, a 300 and some odd page book, hardcover, at our cost. And the reason we're selling it at our cost and have been all summer is because It was my bestseller, one of my bestsellers, and it's been out long enough. It's more relevant now than when I wrote it and came out in 2009. But people don't know this stuff. So we said, well, we do so well with our foundation, we don't need to worry about selling this book. Let's just give it at our cost. So if you want more information on this, you can get the whole book at wvwtvstore.com, Grave Influence. But a whole chapter on Christopher Columbus Langdow, which taught the idea of case law theory in our law schools. So today we have judges making decisions based on some other crazy decision, not based on original intent, not based on what the founders actually wrote and the clear meaning of the Constitution and the reading. It's based on getting one judge to make one crazy decision, then they hang their hat on that. That's how we got where we are today. So today our laws are based on man's opinion, not on the clear meaning of the text. And not that our rights come from the Constitution, as one of our guests was being very clear about that the other night. Our rights don't come from the Constitution. The Constitution says our rights come from God. Mm-hmm. That's where our rights come from. It's from God, not the U.S. Constitution.
That's
the U.S. Constitution is about is explaining why these are inalienable rights from God.
Exactly.
Which should include freedom of speech, right? And making a cake and putting on there is a violation of their freedom of speech and freedom of religion, right? Because to part of freedom of speech is your right not to say something.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So someone else chime in while I let Delta in the studio. She's whining.
I will, but if we I think we finally have an honest Muslim on the comment section.
Let's hear from him.
Taxes and Allah, those are two things you cannot avoid in a Muslim country. But know this, infidels, you would be much better off living in an Islamic country than you are in the degenerate West. Allahu Akbar. I hate to break it to you, Abdullah. Allah is not Akbar at all. You see, a creator that is mighty and powerful, like Akbar would mean.
So wait a minute, we got this dude. He claims to be
Abdullah,
the Sheikh.
Yeah, I know.
Is he real?
Well, the comment is real. He's making an honest
assessment.
Allah is not Akbar because the creator, first of all, a creator who needs slaves rather than creation is not Akbar at all. Number two, a creator who cannot be bilingual, so I have to learn Arabic so he can understand my prayers, is not Akbar either. The rest of your comment can stay, but I just wanted to make this clear. Your Allah is not Akbar.
But do you think this is really real?
It could be.
Abdullah the Sheikh, and he closes out by Allah Akbar. Taxes and Allah, those are two things you cannot avoid in a Muslim country. But
that's honest.
Know this, infidels, you would be much better off living in an Islamic country than you are in the degenerate West.
Well, the statement is seemed to be something a Muslim believes in. So, my only thing is...
Well, we ought to ask him, tell us where you live. Abdullah, tell us where you live. Tell us more about you. You're on the comment section, so tell us more about yourself. This would be interesting.
He's from Saudi Arabia. What he's wearing, if that's his
picture. Hold on,
picture.
Let me take this call from Mike. Go ahead, keep going, guys. We got to get to... by the way, let's get to...
Let him know I haven't found anything out yet per his request.
She hasn't found anything out yet per your request.
But yeah, if that is your real picture, you look like you're from Saudi Arabia because that had the sheikh look or sheikh look is definitely... something that Saudi Arabians would wear. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate your honesty, though, because, you know, he did not decline the truth that Allah and taxes are something you don't avoid in Islamic country.
Okay. Right, and they're probably laughing. He's probably laughing at us debating this whole LGBTQ issue, since in Saudi Arabia they might just throw them off of a tall building.
most likely, yes, they would. And I do see the comment of do not feed the trolls. I am not, and I agree with you, we should never feed the trolls. But statements, I feel like part of my job is to talk to Muslims who are willing to say Allahu Akbar, being Allah is the greatest or the most powerful.
Okay.
So Akbar could also mean that. It's like part of my duty as an ex-Muslim who has been saved by the real God is to tell them where they're wrong about that statement.
All right, let me know when we get, let me get, and I guess it's, let me get more information if I'm making more announcements. Mike was just calling us about something. We got. Did you find any more on social media or online?
I have been looking.
All right,
all
we'll look for more. Let's see. Someone's saying, please don't feed the trolls. Well, we don't.
I was just about answering that. I'm not feeding
the
troll.
Sure, we're
I'm
not sure that he is
educating.
A troll, though. Yeah.
Well, I'm educating.
Because you're saying what he's saying is actually accurate.
You cannot avoid taxes and Allah. That's correct. But what is not accurate is Allahu Akbar. That's a very inaccurate statement. Allah is not greatest or most powerful. So